3, 2, 1.
Welcome, it is SharePoint Dev Weekly episode 55, and it is 7th of October. Yes, it is.
Great.
7th of October. Tomorrow is 8th when we have our monthly community call. That's how I remember that.
And the day after will be the 9th, typically.
That is true. And yesterday was 6th. So
yes, that's the way things work, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That is true. Now, this week by design, we didn't actually want to invite anybody. We wanted to actually talk about something related on, first with Waldeck, related on open source and running adaption of the projects and solutions and getting people know what you're actually building, right? Is that the right way of actually
defining our topic of today? Yes, yes. Basically, how to reach more people with the things that you already do.
Yeah, yeah. So, and how are we qualified of having this discussion? I don't know.
Now. I believe we talked about like last time, not the last week, but the week before that, we talked about the difference between working on projects and working on products. And yeah, then we had a side discussion. I think that was initiated by me, where we say, you know, like building the code is actually the easy part.
True.
And then trying to reach, and that's the same thing, no matter if you build
a product or
whether you do an open source initiative. Like in the end, like you need to reach people. You need, like, people need to be able to find out what you do and understand the value add that you have to offer, right? And
that goes look for people using that. But why would you actually build something if you don't look for people using that, right?
Well, I mean, sure, there are people, like, maybe they like to put it as a note to themselves on their own blog, like, sure, I'm writing this for myself. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think there is a bigger goal, like, to help others, because, like, that's the way we learn, right? I mean, we learn from books, we learn from websites, we learn from blogs, and that's basically, at the end of the day, people sharing their experiences.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And now, and this relates on the discussion. Actually, it relates on the even my day-to-day work, which is around the fact that it's not about shipping a version. It's about actually driving adaption to the new features and functionalities, because that's how the world works. Even if you think about the PMP initiative, which started as a open source initiative executed by two consultants in Microsoft, many moons ago, many moons ago. But it really, one of the objectives of that one was, or challenges of that one was also trying to figure out how do we reach for the audience so that they know that what's available, rather than re-implementing the wheel, because there was actually a lot of IP available for people to take advantage. And and still, it seems to be a discussion where every now and then people are saying that, I was having this meeting with these customers, and customer had never heard about this PMP thingy, and they have a developer team, which is like, no, people, look around.
I mean, it only proves that, on the other hand, it's like, what should we have done to reach them?
True, absolutely.
Right, it's always like a two sides of the coin, right? There is the effort, and like people, like, it's not like we hide it from people. So if you, let's say, come to the common places where things are being shared, meaning the official blogs or Twitter account, well, you will come across it sooner or later, right? But on the other hand, maybe that's not enough. Maybe there are people who
don't. But it's not like everybody actually watches Twitter. That's the thing.
Exactly.
So you need to use multiple different channels to reach to your target audience. And in our case, obviously, as nowadays the BNP is part of our official guidance and everything else, we use email communications, we use blog, we use Twitter, we use Facebook, we use LinkedIn. So trying to reach to the people and make basically telling them that, hey, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. We have stuff available for you to take advantage.
So the one thing that I'm interested in, I mean, you, I think, probably the same way as I do, are, I don't know if you are dev at heart. I mean, you used to dev. Okay, so at which point did you come to the idea that there is, like, writing the code is just the first step, like, to actually bring it to people and the work that is involved with that, like, that there is more effort in that, and that you actually need to do that in order to even reach your goals at at work. So how did you come to the point, and how do you experience the change?
Yeah, good question. So on my side of the house, I can't remember if we talked about this one. I used to work in a smaller company called, I'm not going to say the company name, but it's related on automated invoice matching and order matching. So basically, if the order had already been approved, then the invoice, if it matched the order sums, then it gets approved automatically, no manual stamping and all of that. And that was fun time, a few years of doing that. In that company, I actually created this. I was super proud creating this full, it was an interface kind of a framework. It was called an iFace, which is kind of funny, nothing related on Apple, because that happened way before. But it was an iFace framework. And as part of that creation of the framework, I started thinking all this from a day one, that how do I make sure that people in the company understands what this is all about? So how do they actually know that they don't need to reinvent the wheel, because that framework was there to help them to actually not worry about certain things like the timing and scheduling and all of that kind of stuff was automatic then in the Windows Server side. And that actually then drove me on doing, let's say, iFace team notifications and announcements and all of that inside of the company. The actual team was just me, but that was just nobody needs to know how small
exactly.
So, but it really helped on then actually getting usage for the code as well. And then that means that then you get credit out of the work what you do as well, because if you have more usage and people acknowledge what you've done, that's a better for the developer of the code as well. And even in, let's say, in the early stages of when I joined Microsoft, one of the things what I've thought about quite a few times is that if you have done a great job as a consultant or as an engineer or as a developer, but if nobody knows about it, was it really a good job? It's almost tree falls on the forest, and if it doesn't
exactly.
Because when you think of it, at least in my case, back in, I work in many, many companies. Back in 2001, I worked in a different company, a relatively large company. And I remember that our, let's say, half a year reviews with my manager starting by saying, so what have you done? Which is like, well, you should know. But if you don't tell.
Exactly.
If you don't tell, and if you don't are visible and explaining for the people what you have done and showcase what you've done, then they can't actually give you maybe a raise, because they're not aware of the things what you do. And that is really the importance of everything.
And that might be maybe even a cultural thing, because I can imagine, or from what I experienced myself, and I'm not saying that everybody is like that, but you see more people, for example, in America, people are more inclined towards sharing what they've done, sharing their accomplishments.
Yep.
Whereas in Finland, I can imagine, is the opposite extreme. Like, no need to applaud me. That's just doing my job.
Yep.
Like, seriously, like going to the other extreme, right? And so I can imagine that, especially now that we work more in the open, more on the internet, there's also the boundary of culture, background, and the things that we do every day, because the way we are, that might be also a blocker, like interacting within groups.
True. Absolutely. And anyway, nowadays, obviously, the situation has changed. So I'm seeing myself as the person who promotes other people, rather than, I don't really care anymore about promoting me, because it doesn't. It's that's not my objective. I'm not getting any additional good feelings about getting more visibility for myself. That's not my point. The point is actually being able to promote other ones, and that's an actually super important thing as well. And should we have an example actually on this one?
Yeah, absolutely.
So as an example, so for us as a community engagement people, we want to promote community. How do we promote the community? Is that, first of all, we need to know that something is available, like hashtag SBDev Weekly in Twitter. We need to know that somebody's writing something cool, so we're able to promote what they do. The other side of the story is also that people need to slightly spend more time on actually explaining how cool stuff they've actually done. And I did prepare a quick demo on this one, and this is my uber cool web part. And there's quite a few of these out there in internet. Can you see what I'm sharing, by the way?
Yes, I can. It's my super cool web part, best ever.
Uber cool web part, yes. My super cool web part. It is best ever. Now, The reason why I wanted to have this practical example is, and now we need to be thoughtful also on the fact that somebody might be listening to podcasts. Mm-hmm. But if you just write your UberCore report, and you don't update the README file and you push it out in GitHub, and then you add a link to or it put it in social media and say that, hey, I have this Uber cool report. It is the best ever. But then the person comes here and says nothing. There's no picture, there's no information. It just says that it's an Uber cool report. It actually makes it really difficult to promote the report because how would I know? I would have to pull it down and compile and check it out.
Go through the code and try to understand what it does, which isn't as easy. And then with everything else that's being shared at the same time, because there's literally an overflow of info. Absolutely. Well, I mean, like, why would you spend your time trying to investigate this one where there might be another example that has all of that additional info, yes. Let's say the overhead, but then also one that makes it really simple to understand, like, this web part does this. This is the way it looks like. And these are the key things that it illustrates.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why, as an example, we always demand certain step requirements for the README files and pictures and everything else if somebody is submitting a web part to our galleries. And the number one the reason isn't actually because it's beneficial for
you
us.
It's more obnoxious.
Yeah, it's more beneficial for the person who've written that so that they are being more visible for other people what they actually built. So actually pretty recent example, we were planning to cover this anyway today, is this one. And this one is a React, it's in the SPDFX report done by Akash. And we require that every single sample has at least a picture and a summary. And then, this one is missing it has the version, but and the author, it is actually bare minimum. And in this case, it's a GIF animation, which is super, super good as well, because then this means that I do not need to pull the sample down and compile it and try to configure that to understand the value of what it does. Mm-hmm. I can understand by watching the GIF animation that is it something worthwhile of having a closer look.
So, exactly.
Really good job from Akash. Obviously, there might be some larger, let's say, descriptions and the stories and everything else. But if it's a simple enough web part and just hitting the APIs, then this is the bare minimum. GIF animation is, anyway, really good.
Yeah, and I guess basically to reiterate that, right, it's all meant towards help us to help you. Like, put in the effort to build this. You put in the effort to submit a PR to... then we would love to help you to reach more people with your work.
Yep.
But in order for us to do that, we could use your help, like having the README materials, what it is, what it does, why it's there, what problem it solves, what concepts it illustrates. Because the more detailed that is, one, it will be more easily for everybody to find on Google or Bing.
True.
And two, like we can, like whenever topic comes up, imagine that we would talk to somebody about flows and like, oh yeah, I know there was this one web part that showed us about flows, and then we can direct people directly to the right sample.
Yeah, absolutely. So really good example. This is kind of a simple sample, but it really demonstrates the in practice, and the small amount of work will increase the visibility of what people are saying and seeing, and visibility for the person who've written the thing. And sure, some person might say that, yeah, but I don't care about those things. Then that's fine. Don't do that. But for those who are looking into getting more exposed for the community, with the small things and small adjustments, your web part and sample and open source code can be much more beneficial for the community as well, and for yourself as well. Super important.
But again, then, right, even then there's an interesting point. So you would say you don't care about the reach, but then you went through the hoops to actually publish your code open source. So how does that match really?
Why are you doing open source and community and open source code if you're not interested on sharing your code to somebody else?
Exactly. So,
that's a really small thing to make sure that everything is ready in here. And like really important thing, like Waldeck said, and the better README means that it can be more easily found from Google or Bing, rather than landing on this kind of things accidentally by whatever location. And then you're like, Well, it says that it's a call of effort, but is
what
it?
Does it do exactly?
Okay, I'm going to stop the recording for a while, not recording, the screen sharing for a while. So just to get back on the on having just two of us. Now, the other side of the, let's say, the driving adaption on these things is also driving, if you would have, and let's say, an open source project like the CLI or BMP Sitecore, and driving the adaption to that open source project, what would be your kind of a guidance on what's the good thing to do? Never give up, definitely, and keep on rinse and repeating.
Well, I guess that's, so the challenging part is that in reality, you should have seen it as, so if you build, for example, a product like CLI or PMP Sitecore, that is a product to me.
Yeah.
Sure, the audience is dev, but it's a product. It's not a guidance. It's not docs. It is a product. And as such, and the funny thing is that in reality, we never do that. Like none of us did that. That in reality, you should have started basically the same way you would build a product, establishing target audience and value. Like what problem am I trying to solve? Is there audience that has this issue and are they willing to switch from whatever they use to use my thing? And then how will I reach them? What is the go-to market? And that is all non-developer work.
Why does the thing exist? Why are you feeling that you want to contribute your free time or your sponsored time, doesn't matter, to that project? What is the additional value what the project is bringing to other ones? And then really use that information then on the messaging as well.
And it's hard. It's hard because like we are developers at heart and we approach problems from the technology side. I know technology. Sure. I can apply technology to a problem and I can solve that. And then... Yeah. Like you might also say, like CLI, that began as me trying to scratch my own itch. I was on a Mac, I couldn't do things on a Mac, so I built the things that I could use on a Mac to do things that I couldn't do.
Yep.
And for me, that was easy to switch because there was no alternative. Or alternative was to start a VM every single time I wanted to do something. So there was like really
easy. What's wrong with that? Come on.
So it was really easy to provide alternative that was, as they say, 10 times better than that. But then at some point, I was like, okay, so how many other people are there similar like me? And it turned out, well, there is a group of folks on a Mac that actually do that.
Yep.
But then at some point, like you're like, okay, it seems like we grow, and then it stops. And you're like, okay, so did we reach everybody? Like, are there, how can we expand? How can we keep growing? How can we keep expanding? And then at that point, you will think about, is there another audience? Is there another problem that we can solve? Can we offer some additional things that are not available in everything else that people use?
Or is it a lack of documentation and messaging that people are just not aware what you actually have?
Or a combination of all of the above.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Absolutely. So from the product point of view, it's like building the code. That was the easy part. Like we can, and actually the funny thing is with CLI, even though we have, so actually yesterday I checked, we have 275 commands in there. But we still barely scratch surface of what you can do in 365.
Absolutely.
We could more easily build more command. We could build twice as much or even more. Yeah. Will it help us reach more people?
Yeah.
And I kind of dare to claim that probably not.
Why is that? Why?
Because it's reach. Because I think there are a number of reasons for which that might be the case. Like one is the interesting thing is, like over the course of last weeks or maybe even months, we realized that majority of our audience is on Windows.
Yeah, which is interesting as well.
and the most frequently used commands are things like add file and folder.
Yeah.
And both commands are also available in PowerShell.
Yes.
So why people switch? And that's where we arrive at the point that one thing that we do too little, we do not understand our audience as good. I don't know why people do that. Like I've heard once, performance. CLI with that operation is quicker than PowerShell. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, if you do it at scale, I can imagine that it cuts down few minutes. Maybe that is important enough thing for you to switch.
Yeah.
Right? But what are other things? Like all the
and trying to find, it's almost like the hunt down of the killer app, right? Like in the Windows Phone or whatever, you always need to come up with a killer app, and then the killer app is the thing which actually is like, or killer game in a console wars. It's all about finding the killer game, which will then make people actually buy the Xbox or Sony or PlayStation.
That's
or whatever.
A different thing, right? Because you
in the same way,
need, right? It's more virality and
sure.
the hype as opposed to. Sure. Like make people switch from something to something else.
Yeah. No, but do you actually want people to switch unnecessarily either, as an example? Because obviously...
Well, to be honest, being responsible from a product, yes. Because building a product, you always compete against something.
Sure.
Maybe it's another thing. And maybe it's something that somebody built themselves, or maybe they just click in UI.
Sure.
So they... If they don't switch from something else, maybe the problem for them isn't important enough. And as such, they will never use you, even if you stand on your head.
Absolutely. And then the question is, do you actually want to keep on investing your time and effort on that one? Or should you combine your effort and time with the other project, which is actually doing exactly the same thing, which is an interesting dimension as well.
Yeah. And also, like, there's things for if you think about a product, it goes through the things like it starts, innovates, but it also comes to the point where, and I think we talked about it in the episode like you pivot. Or is there anything else you can add to increase the value add and then keep growing the audience?
Absolutely. So a good example actually on that one is again, even let's come back on the open source project and that model in a second as well. But even SharePoint Framework is a good example. It is now 2.5 years old in February, 23rd of February, 2019. Yes, it went GA. It actually took quite a long time for the SPFX to gain the momentum. So we were doing repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. And everybody's like, well, we're not seeing any momentum. What's wrong? It's not working. Why aren't people actually adapting? But then there's this weird assumption in for example, in Redmond as well, that whenever we release something new, enterprises will adapt that within 6 months. And the answer is no, they don't, because they need to figure out what is it, and gain the momentum and the critical mass, and then after that, the SPFX adaption, as an example.
But even then, like building a product for a dev audience, basically like an API framework and so on, is different than building a product for a user, right?
Absolutely.
Because for dev audience, you showcase the product by building docs and samples.
Yep. Hello. Say hi for Vesa.
I have no idea. Someone's calling on my phone. I don't know. right. So it's different as such. And I guess that even for the enterprise audience, like we didn't have enterprise docs directly from day one. We released them, I recall, pretty fast.
Yep.
But it still like wasn't there initially day one. And then even then, well, it has to fit in their budget projects.
Sure.
And companies of that size don't switch like that. They're not like, there is this new effort. Let's drop everything and do that.
Yeah, the classic story of do not move to, let's say, newer version of SharePoint, major version of SharePoint until the SP1 is out or whatever. So that's a classic way of thinking.
Awaiting the thing to get, you know, the wrinkles ironed out and
then
be proven.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing, actually. Absolutely. But it's the same rules actually do apply in open source as well. If we have a look on, let's say, the PMP site score, which has now the PMP tenant templates and everything else, and yes, you can use that with CSM, C Sharp, or PowerShell, the PMP PowerShell. The adaption of PMP PowerShell is maybe even better example. It's just flatlined and more people and small crows, and then suddenly, and now it started actually skyrocketing when people understood the value. Plus, they actually saw that month after month, we kept on adding stuff on it.
Yeah.
And we kept on telling that, no, it is safe to actually use this.
And
this
it's
is
not going
go
away.
Away.
And it's not yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Which is, by the way, a super critical piece of the bigger puzzle in open source, which is you want to make sure that you have trust. But how do you gain the trust? You need to have enough people who are actually contributing. If you have a open source project which has one or two contributors,
well, there is the risk that at some point you will say, you know what, I'm bored with that.
Exactly.
That's it.
as long as there's enough people who contribute it, then that means that even though one person could actually go away and start doing something completely different, the other persons can pick up. And that's the beauty of scaling through people.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, but that comes down to different things way beyond, I have this problem, let's solve it with tech. Let's True. Apply technology to an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And
yeah.
Actually, the worst part is that they don't teach that at school.
They don't. Oh, you mean human behavior and human...
Building communities, engaging yeah, with exactly, others, yeah, and that, yes.
That's true, true. That's an interesting topic. This, yeah. So
another one. So guess what? Next week we'll also not have a guest because there's
no. To be fair, next week I'm in Redmond for Dev Kitchen, so we need to figure out how do we do this. And it might be potentially that we'll need to even skip this for next week, which is we'll see. We don't want
to
do that.
Let's try to accommodate it, and if Absolutely. All else fails, then I don't know. We do asynchronous recording.
Yeah, the synchronous recording. That sounds.
Yeah, you know, like there is this game where you write a sentence on paper, you fold it, and you give it to someone else. And then somebody, yep. or, and I'm not sure if it was the way that you only see the last one or you don't see anything at all. And then in the end, you read the whole thing and you're like, wow, that's odd. Like trying to make a story out of loose.
Oh, yeah.
So we could try to do that, like, and I will print a picture of you, and I will just talk at you, and then you will talk at me, and then we'll try to put it together, and like, it's an interesting episode.
We'll see how that goes. Now, coming back on still a few minutes on the open source things, what would be your 3 to 5, let's say, number guidances for anybody who's starting up their open source?
Patience.
Kind of a summary. Yeah,
fall in love in problem, because at times it will be hard. Like, you will doubt yourself whether you have the numbers.
Why isn't anybody actually using this?
Exactly.
What's wrong?
Yes, exactly. And if you don't like the idea, if you do it only for the numbers and the reach, you will not get through it.
True.
Also, Absolutely. And maybe that's harsh to say, but it's not the way I mean it. Think about the exit. Decouple it from yourself. It cannot be just you, because again, like, if it's only you, like, people will see it and it will be a risk. So build it in a way that there is nothing in your head. You automate everything. There is guidance for everything, documentation for everything. Make it as easy as you can to onboard others, to scale through others, and also invite others to basically use the power that is there to build the product you want to build.
Yeah, I think definitely invite the others, and also promote the others who are actually contributing. Super important thing as well, because you need to give people back some acknowledgements, and rather than just putting their name, but the name is visible in GitHub. Yeah, but that's a different thing. And then actually openly saying that, thank you, you actually have made a significant impact on this.
Yeah, and I guess it comes down again to interacting with others, right? Because it's like the pat in the back. Some of us like pat in the back. Some of us like a thumb up is already okay.
Yep.
And some of us are perfectly fine. Like, I know that my work adds the value. It's perfectly fine. You don't need to say that you appreciate it.
Yep.
And everyone's different. And projecting here, like, the way I am, everybody is exactly the same. Well, that will lead you only one way to failure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so trying to take the other people into account in the way how you behave and work and all of that, which is super important in general in this global world. It's being trying to make the team as diverse as possible and inclusive as well. Because then that helps on having potentially people in Asia, Europe, Africa, North America, South America, all around the world working together for a common goal.
Actually, and even because of that, because people have different experiences, backgrounds, they could help you reach these communities as well, because they know their problem, the way to communicate with them, the way to engage with them.
Absolutely.
They know where these people are. Like,
and
maybe
Australia,
they have different social network.
About Australia.
Antarctica too.
And New Zealand usually is way dropped from
everybody. Right. So I guess that's the whole thing. And I guess that another one is that empathy on the internet is really hard.
Yes.
Because it's asynchronous. We don't see each other. You don't see the facial expression. And it's really hard to get the intent out of a written word.
Yep.
Like some, like people are like really bad at trying to read that. And oftentimes you assume that, oh, you assume emotion based on something that on a screen. And it's like, no, I didn't mean it that way. Right. So it's also something like you really need to think twice before responding to anything.
Yep.
And that double check, do you really mean it that way?
Double check before you post it to avoid any misunderstandings on the other side of the line. You didn't mean a thing, but maybe in that culture, that might be seen as an offensive thing.
Exactly.
I'm famous of being way too blunt and transparent and open, and I know that people at some point at least they were like, hey, wait, where? Wow. But again, that's a Finnish way of doing. Yeah,
sorry,
it's a Finnish way of doing that. So we don't do chit chatting. So except. Maybe in SharePoint up with.
Well, you do actually, yeah, every hour for an hour.
No small talking, except within this, no. Being conscious about the time. So that's what's like 3, 5, 6, 7 good practices around open source projects. But yeah, being patient, being deterministic. So basically keep on repeating and repeating. Really make sure that people are seeing what you're doing and the value which might be beneficial for them. Because that's really super, super important thing. The fact that you put stuff on the internet doesn't mean that it's available for everybody. Well, technically it's available, but are they actually aware of that? That's a separate discussion. So I've been having quite a lot of discussions internally in Microsoft, because there's just this weird way of thinking that, hey, we put the video on YouTube, so now everybody knows about it. No, they don't. But we have the sample in GitHub, so everybody can use that. Well, sure, but how would they know that it's actually in a GitHub if nobody's telling that to them? It's not like everybody's just waiting there.
F5.
There's a new sample.
Yes.
That's not how it actually works. So you need to keep on repeating, and messaging. Super important thing. In any open source project or community as well. So definitely. Yeah. Now, cool. Let's actually jump on the screen. Let me share my screen again. In here. So we have
roundup of news.
We have this super cool webport, which by the way is just out of the box webport from the generator. So there's nothing there. But it was for a discussion.
I actually burst about you. You should have removed the repo and then said it is the best webport ever. And now will know.
That is true. I need to actually delete this just to reduce and make sure that nobody's actually spending time on, hey, it has to be cool. Okay.
Build a webport.
Yes.
SLA on it.
SharePoint Saturdays and Denver, October 12th. So Denver is coming up. Really huge speaker list. Looks really, really awesome. A lot of familiar names and faces in Denver next Saturday. There's also SharePoint Saturday Cincinnati coming up. A lot of speakers here as well. A lot of familiar faces. Good setup people definitely in here as well. And then there's a SharePoint Saturday Ensenada in Mexico. And there was a familiar, definitely familiar faces in here as well. So it's good to see that community is traveling across the world and seeing people across the world, because that's always a good thing. Absolutely. And a lot of locals as well in both all of these events, which is great. Now, this one is what we wanted to actually quickly spend some time. So SharePoint Roadmap Pit Stop came out on the 1st of October. That's on, is it on Friday, Thursday, Friday? I don't know. Last week. I don't know. quick summary here. Page diagnostic tools for SharePoint has been updated. So this is basically analyzing the load times of the page. It has a good set of guidance. New and updated for SharePoint web parts. So there's new web parts coming out. World clock web part. And then there's the call to action web part and button web part. I'm a button. Hear me roar. Okay. Interesting. Divider web part as well. I think Mikael Svensson had a divider web part, but now there's one.
I know.
Then there's the news article adjustments, cat files can be previewed directly in browser. That's pretty cool as well. File card activity highlights. I've been saying this locally for quite a few times. Well, not locally, but in Microsoft tenant for some time. It's no local tenant. It's still SharePoint Online.
Local tenant.
underneath my desk, there's the VESA tenant.
Cloud. What? The VESA cloud.
Yes. And then additional settings for site owners to see the site sharing settings. So what can be shared, how they can be shared, access requests, all of this stuff, really cool stuff as well. And sharing reports, which is super important, kind of additional governance for functionalities behind of the scenes. So really, really cool stuff. New OneDrive personal storage options. So I think we are now having a 2 terabytes as the maximum for personal OneDrive, which is pretty cool as well. I don't know if that's actually maximum. I don't know. Maybe it's, and the power Yammer web part is now coming out as well. I think we demonstrated that within the few times in the community calls already, but that's really cool stuff as well. And additional resources behind of this blog post. So really, really great blog posts. So please do check it out. And now, moving on to articles. So this one we are actually already went through, and a rather quite nice web part from Akash. React Check Flow's web part, a nice implementation of Flow integration and moving between the existing Flow, kind of admin experience. So you can actually see all of the flows within that one list from this web part. So kind of cool as well. This one is from this Waldeck guy. He keeps on writing every single week something useful. How to check the SharePoint framework version. Why did you write this? Just out of curiosity.
Because, as you can imagine, oftentimes people ask, like, okay, I have the project, or I have a package, or I want to create a new project. Like, what version do I have? How do I check it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, so again, it's going back to the scratch, like not the 400 level advanced scenario, but really simple things. Like, how do I check this thing? Because that's the first thing before you start. Because before you even do anything, there are multiple options available, and whichever you choose might have impact on whatever comes out at the end, right? Absolutely. And you don't want to build everything only to see that, oh yeah, now it's not going to work, and you need to rework something again for it to work, right? So,
yep. Absolutely. Now, then here from Pete Skelly, deploy common Office 365 development resources using Azure CLI and PowerShell. Nice automation. A lot of actually content. This CDCI area is definitely getting more and more attention, and DevOps in general, I think, in the IT world, which is good.
Yeah, but again, it makes perfect sense. Get things out of your head. Automate. Things cannot depend on you.
Absolutely. Automate as much as you can. And this one is from David Warner. So he's a really kind of focused on SharePoint library components and chaining multiple library components, part one video. Cool. Definitely good video to check out as well, related on library component usage. This one is a low-code solution for publishing Teams conversations on SharePoint. So Matti is basically creating blog posts related on how do you post SharePoint content and create SharePoint content based on the new messages in Microsoft Teams. That's actually pretty cool. You might actually, if there's based on, let's say, message content or something, you might want to surface something somewhere. And yeah, why not, actually. And it is a low-code solution, definitely. It's using Flow for automating that stuff. This one is from Vartaman, Microsoft Teams messaging extension, user authentication all off, and Microsoft Craft. So basically, that most painful thing always when you start developing,
auth.
Right?
Auth. Before you do anything, you have to go through auth.
Yes. And it's been so difficult in the past, but it's getting better and better in many Absolutely. Scenarios. And this is walking through what it means in this context. So really cool stuff from Waterman. He's been really concentrating on Teams side of the house. Well, he moved to work in Valo Intranet, and I think he's working more and more on the Teams integration models for Valo Intranet as well. Exploring Microsoft Craft Toolkit from Sergey. Microsoft Craft Toolkit came out 2 weeks ago, if I remember correctly, and this is a nice, let's say, walkthrough on what you can actually do with it and how you integrate, for example, the task control to a web part and then host that web part in SharePoint or in Microsoft Teams, because that can be as easily done. So you could have your tasks, a custom tasks experience as a Microsoft Teams tab. Definitely. So,
cool.
And here from Stefan, creating Office UI Fabric button without Office UI Fabric in SharePoint Online. So really around the fact that how do we style the buttons and how do we create efficiently these buttons without bundling massive amount of additional code. So exactly. Making things super, super small from a performance perspective as well. And it's actually cool to see that the theming is working really well on the different themes in SharePoint Online as well. So the theming in the Office UI fabric.
Yep.
And in here, Bot Framework 4 SPFX web part released from Stefan Visser. And this is really around having a web part which can be configured, and then it's using the direct line secret to have a discussion on the host, a bot as a web part on the page. So this is actually the web part which you can see right in here. Or it could be floating as a bot picture, and then you click that and poof, it actually shows that. So that's a one way of actually, if you would have an application customizer, you would be relatively easily able to do that as well. So kind of a poof, and you get the assistance available, and then click it again, it will go away. So yep. Quite typical designs. We should come up with a default out-of-the-box way.
Placeholder for bot.
Exactly. But that's it for now for the article. So let me stop the articles and let me get on the one-to-one view. Still, we have a few minutes time before you need to go to another meeting.
Yes, correct.
I need to go as well, relatively soon, to other things as well. Any last things? What are you going to do this week?
So this week, on the one hand, we some meetings at work that is not really that exciting, but then another exciting part is that we're really close to launching an experiment at Rancor related to Flow. So if you are a company or if you know a company that is invested in Flows, get in touch with us.
Yeah.
That is to keep it a bit secret. And then on another hand, in community side of things, we've extended CLI team. Gary Trinder will join the team together to help us manage the effort.
Yeah.
And add some additional things. That is one. Two.
Is that that's related on the discussions before the articles? You want to make sure that even though you would actually leave the project, there would be another people to actually run it.
Yeah.
Right?
So one, I have no intention in doing that.
Yeah. Just to be clear. Yeah.
Two, we saw in Gary a person who has the passion and drive to do more. He proved that actually through the work that he has done in CLI over the last weeks. And we've seen, like, you know what, like, it would make perfect sense for him to make him feel at home in the work that he does and give him room to take initiative and grow with that and do more. Going back to the thing, so two, in CLI, we kind of started to expand into new areas. So we have now two new areas being Yammer and Power Apps components. So we support that in CLI too, basically striving to combine as many different areas in 365 into one, giving you this one place in which you can do everything, as opposed to have 20 million different tools to do bits and pieces here and there.
And then three,
we did the first step towards this new idea that we have in CLI, that we want to help people to see how can they use CLI to build automation scripts.
Yeah.
Because with CLI, well, you can use it in two ways, right? You can run a command and it's done, or you can build a complete script. And I think that there is a lot of growth room for us in that area, because over and over again we see PowerShell scripts, PnB PowerShell, SPO PowerShell scripts, and that's what people have been doing for years. And it's easier to take existing script and adapt to your needs than to build something from scratch, right? So we want to close the gap by basically trying to look, okay, what different scripts are being used a lot, and could you use CLI, and if so, how, to achieve exactly the same thing?
Yeah.
So we published our first script. We have a few more ideas already in the plan, like what other scripts we include. And if you use PowerShell yourself, whether that's PnP PowerShell, SPO PowerShell, and you have your frequently used scripts, do reach out, because we would like to learn more about what these scripts are, what they do, and could we do exactly the same in CLI.
Makes sense. Quickly on my side of the house, there's two community calls this week, the monthly community call and then the SPFX one. Is it the SPFX? Yes, it is. The SPFX run is this week. And then prepping for Dev Kitchen. So we do have a Dev Kitchen coming up next week. We're going to talk about the future of SharePoint Framework with some of our partners and customers, which is pretty cool. So making sure that those hands-on labs and everything else is working properly, which is always fun because, of course, they don't. But we need to figure out.
Things are still in flux, right?
Exactly. That is a Dev Kitchen. We're still building the stuff. But we need to get the code and testing and environments just certain levels so people can actually play around and then they can give us feedback. That's really the idea of the Dev Kitchen. So I'll be flying to Redmond on Sunday, dropping by at the office.
Sorry. Yes, exactly.
But I think that's it for now. So thank you, Waldeck, and we'll definitely come up with a new SharePoint weekly in a week or so.
Yes. Around,
something like that. Cheers. Bye-bye.